drawing room over here.
Oh, hey, come on in. It's the stuff of horror movies. A mysterious illness sweeps across the globe, decimating the human population and ending civilization as we know it. But from the Black Plague to the Spanish flu, pandemics have occurred before, and recent outbreaks of H1N1 and Ebola show the possibility of it happening again. That possibility and the way it is being prevented are the focus of Refuge 2018, an art and science event in Melbourne. Professor Jodie McVernon is the Director of Doherty Epidemiology at the Peter Doherty Institute for Infection and Immunity, and Lee Xiang Lun is the Director of Play Reactive, and they're both my guests in the drawing room. Welcome.
Hello, hi. Thanks for having us.
Jodie, I said that it is a possibility that a pandemic could happen again. Is that being alarmist or accurate?
No, I think it's just a reality that we recognise, and particularly in our world, which is so well connected. If any new emerging infectious disease were to appear in the human population, I think more than ever before in history, there's potential for that to spread across the globe.
So how have we stayed safe so far, given the very real risk there?
I think there are many things about our world that are clearly different from the world of Spanish flu. Clearly, in many parts of the world, living conditions have improved, but not equally across the world. And I think Ebola was a very strong wake-up call to the global community about the risk that we all face as a result of massive global health inequalities.
You lead a modelling and simulation group. What sort of things are you modelling?
So we're really trying to cope with the fact that in preparing for pandemics, we're preparing for the unknown unknowns. We're here trying to think about uncertain futures, think about the spectrum of events that might occur, and then help policymakers to make plans that are proportionate and appropriate to the scope of those events.
And at Refuge, you'll be part of a control room built around an imaginary virus.
Well, Xiang Lun's the man who's going to impose that on all of us, so I'm still somewhat nervously awaiting his next infectious
outbreak. How are you
going to
impose that on us? Please paint me a picture of this imposition, which sounds absolutely terrifying.
Oh, it's nothing too serious. It's just like a board games night, except the stake of the world is in your hands. You are invited into this massive room and you get to play as a virus, essentially building it, trying to take over the world, as it were. But then in the second half, you receive somebody else's work and try to contain that virus, that outbreak. And in trying to contain the pandemic and making sure that it doesn't get too large, you find out who's most at risk. How do we actually approach these problems? What kind of policy making decisions go on behind the scenes? And you're in control.
And what sort of data has informed that game? I'm really intrigued by that. Have you looked, for instance, at Ebola and the way that that kind of manifested and try to model that?
So a lot of simulations and modelling is, correct me if I'm wrong, Jodie, now done on flu, which is also the most relevant, I guess, of viral outbreaks in today's society. I was lucky enough to do a residency at the Doherty Institute, where I got to speak with epidemiologists and clinicians and people running labs, and a lot of that information went into the game to try to make it as realistic as possible.
The flu is the most relevant of viral outbreaks. Most of us would think of the flu as, you know, an annoyance, like it's something you start the sort of winter period going, how can I avoid it for this season? It is awful, but not world-ending. Most of us don't think of it this way. But it's really a bigger issue than that, is it, Jodie?
It is, and I think flu becomes downplayed in our minds because we experience flu pretty much every year. There's a seasonal epidemic, and so we're familiar with it. The real issue is that flu is actually a disease of birds. And in the world right now, we have many thousands more times of domesticated poultry than we've ever had at any time in history. So what we're really worried about is a new type of flu that comes from birds and becomes effectively transmitted between humans who might not be immune to that kind of flu. So it's the fact that it can spread rapidly and quickly. At the moment, we're protected from the fact that it's actually really hard for us to get bird viruses. But if they mutate, it's a real possibility.
Okay, that's so alarming. I'm thinking about all the poultry. I'm completely freaking myself out just thinking about the poultry all around us. So how does that transmission occur? You're worried about this, but how do you be preemptive instead of just kind of freaking yourself out?
So there are massive global efforts to monitor influenza viruses around the world, both in humans and in poultry. So you're probably aware of the H7N9 outbreaks that have occurred in China over several years. That was a source of great concern. The WHO stockpiles viruses to make vaccines. while live bird markets have been closed, but also they've had massive vaccine campaigns in chickens in China, and there hasn't been an H7N9 outbreak this year. So there's a lot of monitoring that goes on between animal and human sectors.
And Jody, as a scientist, what's the value of art around these themes or games or trying to kind of, you know, model or get people involved in how this looks?
So I'll say from the very first, the best part about having the artists in residence was people cared about what we did.
Right, okay. So it's about communicating.
It's about communicating. And it was great to have that perspective, to think about how our messages come across to the public, how to make them resonate more effectively. And also the artists came to us really honestly and curiously with questions that we maybe hadn't encountered before that made us think about our work in different ways and other aspects we needed to build in.
That's really interesting. Tell me about some of those questions that you had.
Oh, some of them were really basic, just what is a virus? And then finding out more about likelihood of how these viruses might spread. Was there anything in particular that took you aback?
There's some really interesting ethical questions that came out about how we think about flu in different populations and, you know, what are we always trying to achieve with vaccines or other things? I think that was kind of very interesting for us.
I think artists are always trying to look for the human angle. How is it relevant to us? And this is the way that we absorb information and hopefully change people's minds. For example, when it comes to vaccination, it's through storytelling. It's through the relevance to our families, to ourselves. And in particular, when we think about games is such an expressive medium to as an art form to tell that, because it allows you an agency to change the outcome. So any simulation or storytelling exercise puts you in the hot seat.
Mm. On RN, I'm Patricia Karvelas. Lee Shang-Lun and Professor Jody McVernon are my guests in the drawing room, and we're talking pandemics. Do you think people are too complacent about this, Jody, at least in the Western world, here in Australia, for instance?
Look, I think it's very hard for people to attend to everything all the time. You know, I think the fact that the swine flu pandemic in 2009 was fairly mild meant a lot of people felt that preparedness was overreacting. But we were very fortunate that it actually was a mild disease. And in most cases, while there were, you know, tragic deaths that did occur, on the whole, it was generally not as severe as could have been. It's clear that at policy level, there's a lot going on all the time under the scenes. How do we communicate with the public? How do we engage concern, preparedness, community resilience building, those sorts of things is really where we, I think, can have an ongoing dialogue. And that's exactly the kind of work that Arts House is doing. So I think this kind of approach, rather than panicking everybody, is very much where we're looking to engage.
And how about building, I suppose, support or trust in vaccination? Because I'll give you obviously we know, for instance, all of the kind of concerns or just lies that have been told about some vaccinations. But the flu one is an interesting one because, of course, there was last year where it wasn't, you know, a great flu vaccination season. It wasn't considered a very good vaccine. And then cynicism in the community rises around vaccination. I've been to a gazillion barbecues with parents, you know, who say, oh, I won't get it again. It's, you know, and I'm a big vaccinator, so I'm like, I don't care if it didn't work very well. I'm going back in next year. But I feel like I'm often, at least anecdotally, in the minority on this. Is that something you're trying to build trust around as well?
So I think at national level, thinking about childhood vaccination, the vast majority of Australian parents are still vaccine acceptors, and that keeps Australia safe. In terms of flu vaccine, I think it's a more subtle story because we're talking about a vaccine that reduces risk, but that doesn't mean it works 100% of the time. So we encourage people to be vaccinated to reduce that risk, to improve their health. This year, the government's invested in two stronger vaccines for elderly people who didn't make as strong an immune response. And we believe that's been an effective mechanism. But it is an ongoing dialogue with the public to have reasonable expectations about what we're doing. And also that vaccination tends to work best at a population level. We're looking to actually protect each other and to help each other, and that sense of responsibility is important.
Shang-Lun, you were talking before about how games can be a great way to communicate, obviously, because they engage people. Mm. It's not sort of passive. You have to be involved. But these sort of live theatre games feel like quite a new form of art. Is that exciting to be getting to define the medium?
Absolutely. It feels like there's a Cambrian explosion of new immersive work, both here and worldwide. Actually, Melbourne is very well placed to lead the games creative industry, and games as a medium of personal expression, of science communication, all these things that people don't necessarily think of when they think of video games as a genre. And so by splicing it and intersecting with other disciplines like theatre, history, science, we get to reveal new sides of what that can do.
And was this a new area for you? This is a very deeply personal question, as in terms of the way that you explore art and games, working in the health space?
Kind of not, actually. I used to be a medical student.
Well, there you go. There's a revelation. So, yeah, you had a hunch about health.
I studied medicine at Monash University at an undergraduate level for 3 years before going on to do ecological economics and then a master's of animation and games.
Oh, what a cool career trajectory.
It's been, well, I'm not sure if it's a career, but it's definitely a
learning
series of
trajectory.
Interests. Yeah, absolutely.
So did that give you valuable knowledge in the new work you were doing? I mean, you obviously didn't go into this, you know, not having any idea.
I remember not liking epidemiology classes. I'm really sorry, Jodie.
Nobody does then.
Don't they?
No, it's just statistics and math and really dry. Anyway, but, but you know, maybe therein was a drive to make it more interesting and relevant and figure out, well, how do I access this and remember it?
And what can we learn more broadly, Jodie, from previous pandemics? I mean, either scientific or the social side. The social side particularly is interesting in terms of herd response, people's reactions.
Yeah, the social side is interesting, and particularly in the theme of refuge, where it's all about building strong communities and resilience and trust. In infectious diseases outbreaks, the person you trust might not be your next door neighbour because they might be a threat. They might give you an infectious disease. So this whole notion of how we help people to be resilient, how we help them to protect themselves but not to disengage, I think is a particular challenge around infection.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you just nailed my personality. When I think someone next door has the flu, I will cross the road.
Oh, no.
Yeah. But it's interesting. Yeah. So what we need to think about not being too insular and paranoid and it's like the opposite of your natural instinct, which is to protect yourself, isn't it?
Well, that's right. So, I mean, I guess it's helping people to understand how they can protect themselves. My daughter was 4 in 2009 and she'd be out and want to blow her nose and say, I can't blow my nose, Mum, because I've got nowhere to wash my hands.
Yes.
Because at kinder, they'd all been taught that's what they had to do. But, you know, really simple messages about reducing risk and that kind of thing and avoiding panic but giving people safe messages.
Avoiding panic but giving people safe messages. One of the things we commonly see in films or books with a, you know, pandemic at the centre, it's such a story arc, isn't it, often, is the collapse of civilization. But that's actually not quite what happens, right? I mean, we have actually become more resilient about the way we react to these things. If you look at the way we reacted, for instance, to Ebola.
Yeah, well, I would say that was a pretty catastrophic outbreak for many of the countries where it occurred.
No, I was not implying it wasn't, but I'm saying then the global response to trying to deal with it was...
Yeah, I think Ebola was a particularly interesting example where the UN actually came in with peacekeepers and that was a really critical part of maintaining the social fabric that could enable a safe response. So I think we appreciate very much for infectious events that a whole of government, whole of society approach is needed to maintain that public stability.
And that public stability obviously is so crucial here. Is that why this kind of trying to make this more accessible and communicate it before we even get there is obviously such a driver for you?
Yeah, I think so. And it's, I mean, in reality, it's easy to think of the catastrophic event in one way, but the harder events are the ones where it might not be so bad. And it's actually a lot harder to make decisions to, you know, constrain people's social behaviour or to give everybody a vaccine when people aren't dying in the streets. And that's actually where governments really struggle. How do we characterise these outbreaks early? How do we do things that are sensible and avoid being criticised for overreacting but still keep the public safe? Mm. So I think that's the really challenging space.
So you're saying when there's already an outbreak, people are really willing to take advice.
That's right. They're much more likely to take whatever it is you want to give them. There's a lot more criticism and complexity in a kind of uncertain or milder event.
And is that right? Is that how you see it too?
I mean, yeah, absolutely. We need to combat the fear that comes around misinformation by clearing things up for people, making it as accessible as possible. One of the difficulties that Arts House faced this year was exactly that question of when you can't trust your neighbours, supposedly, and you can't come together, how do you have an arts event? You know, in the past, previous years have examined flood and overheating, where people naturally gather into the same place. But if that's going to increase infection risk, then you can't do that for this year. It becomes really difficult.
So what do you do?
Yeah, well...
run for the hills!
You've given me the problem. Could you diagnose it now?
Yeah, well, I think it's exactly as you said. During so-called peacetime, when we're not experiencing infectious outbreak, the relaying of government policy becomes really important so that people feel assured that there is an action plan for a reason and it's not overreaction.
Such a fascinating and one of my favourite topics, I've got to say. I know. I'm a bit of a... I'm a student of pandemics. I do like talking about pandemics.
On a scale of academic interest to doomsday prepper, where would you put yourself?
I know. Look, I float around between those two spaces, but you've both brought important sense and facts and logic to this debate. Thank you to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Lee Shang-Lun and Professor Jodie McVernon have been my guests in the drawing room. Shang-Lun is the director at Play Reactive and Jodie is the director of Doherty Epidemiology at the Peter Doherty Institute for Infection and Immunity. And they're appearing at Refuge 2018 Pandemic at the Arts House in Melbourne. That's it. That's all we have time for tonight. But you can find us any time of the day. We're always online. We're always hanging out on the internet. RN Space Drive is how you find us. Coming up next, it's Australia Wide. Have a great night.